This week's Chabura is somewhat of a continuation of last week's Chabura. Last week we talked about the differences between a Meredes B'Tashmish Amita and a Meredes B'Mais Yedayim. And it seems that there was a price on the Merida B'Mais Yedayim, according to different Rishonim, so different types of Meridos carry different price tags, but for the most part you were always able to evaluate how much the husband was being deprived of, as opposed to Moredes B'Tashma Shemita, which never really seemed to have a price tag at all. And I mentioned something last week which I want to develop a little bit more here. Particularly, I want to survey the evidence about whether or not the Knas for Unika Mefata is in some sense or other, indicative of the inability to put a price tag on those crimes, or is it not necessarily indicative of that? So I want to begin by seeing over something that the Achronim say, the Chasam Sofer, the Ar Sameach, Reb Shimon Shkop, the Stipler, all say the same basic idea with minor differences. And the beginning point of this is to note that there is a difference in language between nezek, which is what we use when a person gets punched in the face or when their ear gets chopped off or their bone gets broken. That's what we call nezek. And then there's tashlume nezek, which is the things that he gets paid in exchange for being punched in the face or having his ear chopped off or his arm broken. And pigam, which is a term that we use for sometimes or always for nezek that comes b'derech tashmish. So throughout the third parak of Ksubos, we have references to boshes u'pigam rather than boshes v'nezek, even though pigam and nezek seem to be synonyms. So the Achronim ask, why is it that nezek, what is called nezek in Nezikin, turns into pigam in Elunairos? And the Achronim answer based on two contradictions in the Rambam. The first contradiction concerns Mode B'Knas Pater. The Rambam on the right side of the Mekoros sheet, where it's underlined from Chov Elomazik Parakei, says, Hode Me'atzmo Pater Min HaNezek U'Min HaTzar. If a person comes in and he says, Yitzi, or based in Shemuna Rabbeisai Dayanim Mumchim, I just broke Yitzi's arm. So the Dayanim Mumchim will say back, okay, so now you're Potter from Nezek and from Tsar because Mode B'Knas is Potter. That's what the Rambam seems to pass. In contrast, on the left side, the Rambam says that if a person comes in and says Shemuna Rabbeisai Dayanim Mumchim, that I was ma'anis this girl, or I was mefata this girl. Rambam says about onis, mishalim boshes u'pigam behodas piv. He pays boshes and pigam, even though he was moda. And ilu hoda, if he was hoda about pitoy, hayim mishalim la boshes u'pigam batzar. Sorry, opposite. The first one was pitoy, the second one is onis. Hayim mishalim la boshes u'pigam batzar al pi atzmo. So it seems to be a steer in the Rambam is Nezek and Tsar, Boshes and Tsar, are those like Knas, where we say Modeh B'Knas Potter, or are they like Mamon, where we say Modeh B'Mamon is Chayiv? So that's one steer in Rambam. The second steer in Rambam is underneath this one in the sources. The Rambam in Chov Elomazik says that if a person breaks someone else's arm on Yom Kippur, he chops off the person's ear on Yom Kippur, so he's going to be Chayiv B'Tashlumin, but Potter from Malkus, because Beferish Ribsa Taira Chayvel B'Chaveiro B'Tashlumin, that whenever you have Mamon and Malkus, usually you get Malkus and not Mamon, but if the Mamon is from a Chavala, so then you get Mamon and not Malkus. And it makes no difference whether the Malkus is from the Isser of not being Chovel, or whether the Malkus is from the Isser of Yom Kippur, or whether the Malkus is from the Isser of Yisrael lemamzeres umamzer liyisraelis. It makes no difference where the malchus is from. The Rambam seems to say that if you have tashlumei nezek, those tashlumei nezek will exempt the mazik from any malchus that came along in the same action as his nezek. And yet the Rambam still says that if a person is ma'anis a girl or is mefata a girl, in which case he incurs a chiyuv of paying boshes and a chiyuv of pigam and a chiyuv of tsar in the case of ones, and maybe this girl is a mamzeres and he's a yisrael or he's a kohen and she's a grusha, whatever the isser may be, says the Rambam, if there was hasra, he gets malchus and is pater from mamun. This is the third line. Im hisrubo, hareza loke ve'inu mishalim knas. She'in adam loke u'mishalim. So the kasha is, if he was mazik somebody on Yom Kippur, so the tashlumei nezek are poter him from the malchus. And if he was mazik a girl, and at the same moment incurred malchus for being ba'al mamzeres, so why don't we say that the tashlumei nezek, the boshes and the pigam and the tsar, are poter him from the malchus of Yisrael ha'ba'al mamzeres? It's the same exact situation. There's tashlumei nezek, there's malchus, so the tashlumei nezek should be poter him from the malchus, which he became liable to in the same action as he became liable to the tashlumei nezek. So the Achronim use the same basic idea to answer up these three discrepancies, a discrepancy between Pigam and Nezek, and the two stiras in the Rambam. And they basically write that there is no retail value, or even wholesale value, to having a person's ear chopped off, or their arm broken, or their nose punched. If you go over to most people in the world, assume we're talking about people who are making a steady income and are not desperate for cash, and you say, look, you know, I'd like to chop off your ear, how much money would you like to give me permission to chop off your ear? So I actually want to take a poll about this because it's not so pashut. How much money would you demand if somebody came over and said that he wanted to pay you to chop off your ear? You would let someone chop off your ear for $1 million? Wow. Okay. How about you?
After all day, Achira.
It's your worst enemy. He wants to do it for Kairos Ruach. It's not going to help him from anyone else.
That's a tough question.
Maybe like, I mean, if it's a body part that I need for everyday use, then I don't know if I would.
You have a doctor here. Can what happens if a person's ear gets chopped off? Can they still hear?
Yeah, the outside of the ear. It just helps like kind of direct sound waves to the eardrum.
Maybe a couple $100 million.
Okay, so we have two people here who would be willing to accept money to have their ears chopped off, and two people here who seem to be uncertain or definitely unwilling to accept money to have their ears chopped off. So that's what the Achronim say, that Nezek, and the same thing Tsar, let's say that this is going to be a little bit more difficult. Let's say that a person wanted to give you the sensation of having your ear chopped off. So how much money would you charge for that? You keep your ear, but you experience the pain of having an ear chopped off.
Boy. I'm more willing to do that.
You'd be willing to do that.
At least I'm more willing than the other
people. Yeah. Yeah, pain. You know, people are, Meiser Nefesh to earn some money, so very often it's uncomfortable, so what's the difference? Discomfort, pain. So this may, there may be a little bit more of a cash on the Achronim. The Achronim are assuming, could be that Nishtan Wahtvayim, but they're assuming that there is no retail value either on the actual Nezek or on the pain. As opposed to Shavas, Shavas just means unemployment. You were out of work, so we know exactly how much that's worth, however much your boss is paying you. So you say, how much would you charge to not go into your job? So you come up with a number, doctor's bills. So again, you know, there's a concrete number to that. Boshes, so you also have to down on Boshes. It's not so clear that Boshes belongs with Shavas and with Ripoy, because you could also say a person, certain types of shame, a person would never subject themselves to, even for large amounts of money. But you could say, you know, it's more intuitive that people are willing to subject themselves to shame than they are to pain. That's an important, I guess, psychological question. So the Achronim assume, at least for the Rambam, that there is no retail value to Nezek and to Tzar. And consequently, when we establish a value and say whatever the difference is between the person's original price and their final price on the slave market, that's an arbitrary value. It doesn't actually correspond to the degree of what was lost. And that's part of what defines a knas. A knas is when the payment received or the payment being paid doesn't correspond to what was actually suffered. Shloshim shel eved. The eved could have been worth $1 million. It could have been worth $2. And 30 shkalim is what the owner gets no matter what. Chatzi nezek, the Gemara thought, maybe would be knas because it's less than the nezek shalim. And so therefore, it doesn't correspond, even though proportionally it does, but it's less than the actual nezek that was incurred. And over here also, the nezek itself is full of intangibles and therefore can't really be compensated for, and therefore the compensation does not correspond to the nezek, and it's dome to knas. So we'll say about it, mode b'knas pater. And we'll say about it that that's the classical tashlumi nezek, where the Torah says that if you incur a chiyuv of tashlumi nezek, it's poter you from any malchus that you may have gotten. In contrast, say the Achronim, if you go over to a father in the ancient times in the Middle East or someplace else, I don't think that you would find any father who would be willing to do this nowadays, but that's because marrying off children when they're under 12 years old is just totally out of our culture. And the reason, so let's assume that for a second. You go over to a father and you say, look, you know, I want, how much money would you take for me to chop off your daughter's ear? So we'd say for sure, he's not going to take anything to have you chop off the daughter's ear. How much money would you like in order for me to be boil your daughter? So then he'll say, okay, let's sit down and we'll negotiate. Because we know that Yaakov and Lavan, they negotiated, and Yaakov agreed that he would work 7 years as a shepherd for Lavan in exchange for Lavan's daughters. So Lavan basically sold his daughters. Okay, granted, Yaakov was a big tzaddik, and he was sure that the daughters would be treated nicely. But if it hadn't been Yaakov, so would Lavan have, would he maybe would have asked for a little bit more? Maybe he would have asked for 8 years? Maybe not. It seems that it was normal for people to bargain about, I'll give you my daughter for a certain amount of money. What does it mean, giving my daughter? It means that he's giving this person reshus to break the besulim of the daughter and subject her to whatever pagam is involved in that and whatever tsar is involved in that. And it's something which has a retail value. Everybody, every father, every daughter, every, you know, potential chassan. So there's an equation, a calculus, and you plug in the numbers and you figure out, is it worth 7 years as a shepherd or 5 years as a shepherd or 10 years as a shepherd, whatever it might be. But there is a retail value. And therefore, say the Achronim, Boshes and Pagam, Daika, it's particularly Pagam because it's not the same as Nezek, has a retail value, and therefore what the father was nifsad, or what the girl was nifsad, was something which is able to be assessed precisely, and therefore it has a din of mamon gam, or it doesn't have a din of knas. Now, it's definitely, people pointed out to me that the way that we assess the pagam is not really the way that I just described, meaning it's not as if you ask the father, how much money would you want for your daughter, and then we make him pay that. That's not the pagam. The pagam is how much she went down in the slave market, which does not necessarily correspond to that number. So that's a kasha also on the Achronim. Also, the Achronim are assuming that parents are so mercenary. So I know that nowadays it's definitely not true. This mercenary mindset does not exist, not amongst women, not amongst parents. I think that to a certain extent, this mindset did exist much more, even as recently as 100 or 200 years ago, where women wanted to go into the marriage for the financial security that it provided, rather than for the emotional, factors of love and everything else, and mutual striving. So it's definitely possible that the reason this is so strange to me is because it's coming from a cultural context which is different than my own. Nonetheless, this does seem to be the assumption of the Achronim that Boshes and Pagam are compensation for something with a defined retail value which was damaged, and for that reason they're also not included in the ordinary Tashlumi Nezek. It's Tashlumi Nezek which exempt a person from Malkos, but that's Tashlumi Nezek which include compensation for all of the intangibles. But here, there is no compensation for the intangibles. It's compensation entirely for something tangible. That's what the Stipler, Reb Shimon, the Ar Sameach, will say. There are slightly different formulations. Amongst these Achronim, we have three different potential formulations. One of them, Reb Shimon mentions this, is that people don't own their own bodies. A guy who sells himself into slavery to another guy is only able to sell the Ma'asi Yadayim. He's not able to sell the guf itself. And even when a Jew is Kona, an Eved Kenani, so the reason that he gets this Kinyan HaGuf is because he's basically in charge of the Geiros of the Eved Kenani, and that gives the Eved Kenani a special relationship with him. It's not as if the Eved Kenani is able to sell his guf to a Jew. The connection, the Kinyan HaGuf, comes about as a result of the Geiros, and people are not the owners of their body. There are some beautiful articles. Rabbi Lam, I think, has a beautiful article about suicide in this connection. Rabbi Zevin, Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin, has a beautiful article which took me about 5 minutes to decipher the title. It's called Mishpat Shin Yod Lamed Vav Kuf. Shylock. I kept on thinking. Probably what you were all thinking. So you're quicker than I am. So he's called Mishpat Shylock, and it's a whole long, 20, 30 page article where he deals with the question of whether Jewish law actually allows a person to pledge a pound of their flesh if they neglect to pay the loan on time. And his conclusion, the same as Rabbi Lam's conclusion, the same as Rav Shimon Shtov's conclusion, is that people are not bailim on their bodies, and therefore they're not able to sell a pound of their flesh or to offer a pound of their flesh as a guarantee. So that's one of the reasons that Rav Shimon gives. Other Achronim seem to say that it's not so much a moral, ethical thing, but rather it's a sociological thing, that for the most part, people don't put up their ears for sale, or they're breaking their arms, or it's not something which is sold on the market. Lu Yitzuyar, there was some sort of a black market for organs, and somebody drugged somebody else and then harvested organs from them, and they woke up and they were missing their kidney. So let's say that happened. So would we say that the compensation for that has a din of knas and modi b'knas pater? Shimon Rabbi said, I just drugged somebody and I took out his kidney, so now I'm pater from Nezek and from Tzar. Or do we say that no, it has a din mamon? So that's going to depend on which of these two formulations you adapt. If you say that it's because we don't own our bodies, so then it just this kidney was not something which you had the ability to sell, and so it's not considered to be something tangible. On the other end, if it's just because it isn't sold, so then it's possible that this black market would actually change the situation around. But I wanted to suggest a third possibility, and that is that when it comes to pigam of onis and mefata, so the Torah separated out the tangibles from the intangibles. It said that the intangibles are compensated for via the knas. That's what the knas is for. It's to compensate for the intangibles, and it's a knas because it's compensated for intangibles which can't really be compensated for. And what remains then is pure mamon, meaning the Torah said that the knas is for the intangibles, and then the boshes and the pigam then become mamon separate from the intangibles which are compensated for in the knas. And that's why we'll treat it as distinct from tashlumi nezek. That's why we'll treat it as something which is modeh b'mamon, and he'll still be chayev, as opposed to regular nezek, where the tangibles and the intangibles are all mixed together. They're all wrapped up in that same compensation package, and therefore, since the knas elements are dominant, the intangibles and the nezek and the tsar are more significant than the tangibles. That's why we'll say modeh b'knas pater. That's why we'll say that b'feirish rib satora chovel b'chaveiro l'tashlumin. So that may work for these Rambams. However, I think that it doesn't work for a number of other Rambams. And I want to just introduce these Rambams by reflecting on the Shita Satosvos, who argue on the Rambam twice, where this particular interpretation works very nicely in Tosvos, but very poorly in the other Rambams. So what are the disputes? They have to do with the similarity of Knas to Tashlume Nezek, to the Boshes and the Pigam. So Tosos pointed out that there are a number of contradictions in Sugyos. In some places, we seem to treat there as being a hekesh between the Knas and the Boshes and the Pigam, as if to say that whatever happens to the Knas will also happen to the Boshes and the Pigam. And just some examples of that are, let's say that a woman becomes an Arusa, and then she's divorced from Erusin. So there's the Gemara gives a three-way machlokes about what happens to the knas. Does the father get the knas? Does the girl herself get the knas? Or is there perhaps no knas? Those are the three opinions in Tanoim. And there's a machlokes how to paskin. We paskin that the girl herself gets the knas. And the question is, what happens with the boshes and the pigam? So the Baal Yatos will say, this is the Rosh in Parak Gimel Siman Hei, which I have here on the bottom. The Rosh says that Nire degam boshta upegam al atzma, that her boshes and pegam go to her the same way that the knas goes to her. And the Rosh cites as evidence of that the fact that there's a hekesh between knas on the one hand and boshes and pegam on the other hand. A second example is the question of what happens if a woman is an anusa or a mefuta, and then she dies. So the Gemara has a shaila about this. It asks, what happens if she dies? And it says, Abaye says that now the aggressor, now the oneser and the mefata goes free, doesn't have to pay anything. And Rava was uncertain about whether he goes free or whether he has to pay. And that's Abaye and Rava. We paskin like Abaye that the guy is scot-free. However, there's a machlokes, once again, between Tosfos and the Rambam about what he's free from. According to Tosfos, Lemaskanas HaGemara, he's free from everything, meaning he's pater from knas, and he's also pater from paying boshes and pegam, because knas, boshes, and pegam are all in the same boat. According to the Rambam, this is an inference that the Marshal and Reb Chaim and others draw from the Rambam. I don't have this here on the sheet because I only got a chance to look into it this afternoon after I printed the sheet. The Rambam says that he's pater from knas, but he pays boshes and pegam to this woman's heirs. So again, the Rambam seems to disassociate the knas from the boshes and pegam, and the Baal Yatosvos seem to associate the two of them. On the other hand, even the Baal Yatosvos agree that under some circumstances, the boshes and the pegam are distinct from the knas. For example, modeh b'knas is pater, but modeh b'boshes and pegam is chayev. The Tosfos, Baal Yatosvos agree to the Rambam about that. And furthermore, it's an explicit Mishnah that a person who is mefateh pays the boshes and the pegam right away, regardless of whether he marries the mefuta or whether he doesn't marry her. But the knas he only pays, that's conditional on whether he marries her. So it's clear, again, a clear distinction between the knas and the boshes and pegam. So Tosos now have to figure out, if you see like the Rambam, so then you could say that most cases they're separate. Most cases they're separate. Is there a Hekesh? Maybe we'll even just deny the existence of such a Hekesh. But Tosfos, who say that such a Hekesh exists, how do they explain the discrepancy? And the answer is, in a couple of places, Tosfos use the following formulation. Afagav di iskash leknas. I'm reading there from Lamed Tes Amud Beis, Dibra Maskla Boshes. Afagav di iskash leknas, kainu leinyan shenitan ze lemisha zenitan. They're connected to knas in terms of the addressee, that whomever the knas is addressed to, the boshes and pekam are also addressed to. Aval yesh mekomos shepater miknas legamri v'chaya beboshes upegam. However, there are plenty of places where there is no knas, and yet there is boshes and pegam. So the way that I want to read this Tosfos, and this is like one of four or five Tosfos that say this, is the following. Fundamentally, the knas and the boshes and pegam are just the two halves of ordinary tashlumi nezek. The Torah sort of separated them out. It was mevarer, you know, that these are for the intangibles, those are for the tangibles. But fundamentally, they're all part of the same compensation package. And therefore, it makes sense that whomever the compensation package is directed to should receive all of the compensation, the same way that if it was regular Tashlumi Nezek, it would go to the Av. So now it also is going to go to the Av. It's not 100% Pashut because there's a Gemara Bava Kama that talks about the Tashlumi Nezek. If a daughter gets damaged, if she gets punched in the face or her arm gets broken, so the father might not be entitled to that money, so that's something we'll have to, needs further analysis. But I'm assuming for the time being that if the Torah directs this compensation package to the Av, what it means to say is that at least the compensation package for this type of Nezek, for this type of Boshes, this type of Pegam, goes to the Av. Where do we separate them? The only time that we say Lo Hukash is when it comes to those particular things which relate to the two threads being separate. Mode b'knas pater, you're not going to say mode b'boshes u'pegam pater, because what the Torah achieved by separating the knas from the boshes and pegam, what the Torah achieved is making the boshes and pegam mamon, making that compensation for the tangibles, and making the knas compensation for the intangibles. The same might be true of the nisuin versus, meaning, why do we delay the knas until we see whether he chose to marry her or not, and not the boshes and pegam? The answer might be that the marriage is suitable compensation for the intangibles, as opposed to the boshes and pegam, which the marriage is not a compensation for. That's a genuine nezek. It's a tangible loss, and therefore he's got to compensate her regardless. So this works beautifully, I think. This particular distinction works nicely within the sheet of the Balei Tosfos, that those things that relate particularly to the knas as compensation for intangibles will only apply to knas, as opposed to those things which don't relate to knas as compensation for intangibles. There we'll say that the boshes and pegam go to whomever the knas goes to as well, because fundamentally, with this one exception of having separated tangible from intangible, fundamentally they're all part of the same package. But for the Rambam, who says that even in those cases where you might have expected them to go together, we take them apart, so then you have to say that when the Torah separated them, it separated them in a much, pretty much for everything. So is that a stira to what I said before in the Rambam? This I'm now thinking on my feet. So that before we said that this is the Achronim saying the Rambam, that reformulation or alternate interpretation to that of the Achronim for the Rambam is that the Torah separated Boshes and Pegam. So no, maybe it's even better now, because the Rambam really is going to be the champion of the separation between Boshes and Pegam on the one hand and Knas on the other hand. The Rambam's a champion of that. He says that even in contexts where the Balei Tosfos say and they trumpet, there's a Hekesh. There's a hekesh between boshes and pagam and onis. The Rambam says, no, no such hekesh exists. Once the Torah came and said, this is for the tangibles, that's for the intangibles. Once the Torah said that they're distinct entities, so that manifests itself even in all these other areas as well. Okay, so that still works for the Rambam. There's only one Rambam which is going to be difficult, but we don't have time for that. So